It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
for a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble, or you are listening wherever our podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We know you have a lot of options out there. If you like the show, consider rating it. If you think we've done a good job, we appreciate 5 stars. It helps us fight that algorithm battle. If you're interested in connecting with me, macroaggressions.io is the website. You can go to Activist Post. You can go to Natural Blaze. These are all part of the family now. I hope you're getting your news there. Activist Post works really well on cell phones, but we did not build an app for it that was strategic. We don't want to centralize control into the hands of Apple and Google and have them turn it off like they did with Zero Hedge. So you're just going to have to bookmark it on a, you know, whatever. So just check it out. Go to activistpost.com. Get your news there. We're republishing fantastic articles. By the way, Hypocrisy. Second edition is now available. Here's what it looks like for those of you watching. New book cover is fantastic. Thanks to Jack Merkel for hooking me up with that. The audiobook is available as well if you're interested. And the second edition tightened up the book quite a bit. We were able to shave about 70 pages off, not of content necessarily, but just reformatting it. So it's a much more appealing book, I think, right now. So take a look. You can get it wherever you get. You can go to barnesandnoble.com. You can go to Amazon. You can get the audiobook on those places at Audible and Amazon and Spotify. They have it as well. So take a look. See what you think. Big thanks to our sponsors. Couldn't do the show without you. Christian Yordanov is my certified health practitioner in Portugal, and you don't have to live in Portugal to have him help you out with your health. And I suggest that you give him an email, because he'll give you the insight of what's going on inside your body in a way that your doctor just simply will not. You go get a blood test at your doctor's office and do all that, and they'll tell you a couple things, but they're not going to give you a multi-page, you know, my document that I got from doing my metabolic function assessment was 13 pages, and I know where I'm good in certain areas and where I'm deficient in others. It's like having the answers to the test before you take the test. I mean, you don't have to go guessing what's wrong with you. He's going to figure it out right away when you do this, and he's offering this metabolic functions assessment test free to us, to our listeners, because of the partnership I have with him. And you can go find out more about this at livelongerformula.com. Book yourself a consultation with Christian. Talk to him about what's going on. You can't put this stuff off. You've got to be proactive. You cannot live in denial. If there's something going on with your car, you'd take it into the shop, right? If there's something going on in your body, it's even more important than your car. Don't have some doctor guessing. talk to Christian. He'll give you a lot of insight as to what's going on. I mean, the theme of this show is to be proactive and not live in denial. So don't lie to yourself. You know, get honest about what's going on. Go to livelongerformula.com and see if it's right for you. And also, it's the new year, and I hope you have your last will and testament, your medical directive, financial power of attorney, all those things that you need. Get those documents done. Get it done. Put it in your safe. Put it wherever you keep valuable things. And know that if something were to happen to you, you'll be taken care of. I know you don't want to do this. Nobody wants to go do this. Nobody certainly wants to spend a couple $1,000s to hire an attorney to do these documents. It seems relatively easy. Like maybe there's a standardized process to doing this. Well, guess what? There is. Legal Shield can help you with this. They've been doing this for 50 years in the United States and Canada, and you'll get access to an attorney in your area for $30 a month. It's very reasonable. The sorts of things that they do is they'll go over documents. You know, this is a prime opportunity for you to knock out all these documents in the first month. I suggest you do it. You'll feel better about things. You'll know that you've crossed it off your list. You'll feel like this service has paid itself off for the next year or two or whatever. It's the best money you'll spend. I suggest you go to the website that they built specifically for us and see if it's right for you, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com, and see what you think. If you need the small business plan, they've got it. If you need Identity Shield, they have that. If you carry a gun, there's documentation for that. There's a lot of opportunity over there. There's a lot of a la carte items that you can add to your membership. But they tell us equal justice under the law. I mean, that's what they say in America, right? But that's nonsense. Everybody knows. If you have access to a good attorney, things start to go a little bit differently. If your job wants you to sign some new contract, some employment document that has wording in there about what you agreed to do with medical procedures, i.e. vaccines and whatnot, you do not need to sign that until you've had your attorney take a look at it. And don't feel like you're being hijacked by your boss and feel the pressure whether you have to sign it right away. No, rich people send things like that to their attorneys. That's what they do. Now you have access to an attorney for $1 a day, and a good one too, on average 22 years of experience. So not somebody fresh out of law school. So these are people who know what they're doing. So if you think it's right for you, go to don'tgetpushedaround.com and pull the trigger. Well, are you trusting the plan? How's the plan going? Are you trusting the plan? He's going to make America great again. Part two, Electric Boogaloo, don't you know? But, you know, just, oh, I don't know, color me a little bit suspicious, because right on schedule, he is surrounding himself, I'm talking about Trump, with some of the most dangerous technocrats in the world. So, I mean, I guess the first time around, it was John Bolton and people like that who are thinking of dreaming of new and adventurous ways to kick off World War III, specifically with Iran. And of course, John Bolton is not in the new administration, but it's not any better. And we said it was going to be like this. I'm not trying to like dunk or anything, but you just have to know who Trump is, right? You have to watch him. Don't listen to what he says. Watch what he does. And he says one thing and does another. So I'm very concerned with the technocratic side of this. I think of the elections or selections as the choose your own adventure book, where you just, it's up to you to pick what your trip is. And I certainly was not enthusiastic about having DEI take another four more years of embedding itself into our academia and to our workforce and the ideology of America. I mean, it is incompatible with American values. It's incompatible with human values, the DEI stuff. It's just nonsense, gibberish. And you can tell it is, because all the people who came out of college with these woke degrees, they are going to be serving you coffee very soon, because there are no more DEI positions available for them. By the way, when you found them, they were like super high paying jobs, because the last thing you want to do is stick someone in that position and then get cheap with them too. Cause you know, you can never bow down to these people at all, because they're never happy. There's always more demands. And So on the one hand, I'm glad that we don't live in that paradigm any longer where, you know, you've got to put your pronouns in your email signature or you get shamed out of your office or you don't get the promotion or whatever. I mean, luckily there's a little bit of sanity being infused back into the world due to Trump's executive orders and just his overall feeling about it. So, you know, I'm not going to shit on the guy on for everything that he's doing. I'll take the victories where we can get them, but let's not pretend like he's here in fixing all of the problems, right? He's creating new problems, and the problems he's creating might even be worse. So what we're going to do in this episode is we're going to talk about Trump's Brave New World. We're going to talk about the meaning, the sort of the history of the book Brave New World. And we've talked about it before, but it's worth repeating. And the reason why it's worth repeating is because I get a very bad feeling when I see these guys that he's surrounding himself with. Sam Altman, Larry Ellison, Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, Joe Lonsdale, all the tech bros, Vivek, Elon, you know, Vivek is, I don't know if people know the story of how he made all his money. I mean, he made all his money in like biotech with a shit product that he basically got approved somehow. It was a pump and dump scheme. I mean, he's no better. He's not coming in to save the world. He's not going to, I'm going to be part of Doge with Elon Musk. We're going to cut all this government waste. That'd be great if you actually did what you said you were going to do. But let's not pretend that you're not some sort of villain as well. But he speaks so well, right? Vivek, oh, we love him. And I've watched him. He plays piano. He's just like you and me. Yeah, he's just like you and me as he's looting Wall Street for hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars with his horseshit product that he put out. Company's bankrupt now anyway. So, but not that he stuck around. So we'll get into this. I want to talk about Sam Altman. I want to talk about Larry Ellison. If you guys aren't familiar with these guys, you will be by the end of this. And then we'll wrap up with sort of what we think Trump's got planned here. But let's start with Brave New World, because, you know, I think that the technocratic hellscape future is it's worse really than the woke future. The wokeism is annoying and stupid and hilarious and, you know, kind of counterproductive. And, you know, I mean, we're sort of the laughing stock of the world when you really push this ideology. It's counterproductive to business. It doesn't make any sense. And so I'm glad it's not there. But when I start to, hear what these people close to Trump are talking about the future and how they envision the future, boy, man, I think I might actually prefer Tranny story time to what Sam Altman has planned for us. And because what they, you know, who they're connected to is a much darker agenda. Now, it's sold to us as like, you know, the future. Oh, the future is going to be great. The future is great. Like, you know, it's bright. We're living in a, you know, in the Jetsons, you know, where you can just, your little spaceship folds up into your briefcase and you just walk into work with it. So that's sort of the sales pitch. But reality is digital enslavement and humanity being numbed to it all with the proverbial soma, which appears in Aldous Huxley's book. Let's talk about this. Brave New World. Have you read the book? You should, because it's you know, it was written in 1932. So, you know, almost 100 years ago. And unfortunately, the bad components of the book appear to be just around the corner in reality for us. But I don't think it's too surprising once you understand who the Huxleys were and how their work was used and why they were in the position they were in to begin with. You've heard of Julian Huxley, Sir Julian Huxley, the brother of Aldous Huxley. He was in charge of the British Eugenics Society, and he was the guy who had the idea to rebrand the name British Eugenics Society, or eugenics in particular, as transhumanism. And he did that because they were taking a lot of heat for the mass murder that is associated with eugenics, rightly so. And so in a marketing attempt to sort of distance himself from the old murderous spree that he and his fellow depopulationists are enthusiastic about, they've changed the name. They rebranded it in the 60s, you know, when you're coming out of the International Geophysical Year in the early 50s, and you're talking about going to the moon, and you're talking about flying cars and all this stuff. And so, so why not use a cool name like transhumanism? I mean, it's the future, right? It sounds so futuristic. You almost, if it were just the name, that would be one thing. But unfortunately, when you understand the history of it, you understand that it's about depopulation, that transhumanism is eugenics and eugenics is depopulation. So they can slap whatever name they want on it. We're going to dig into it and sort of pick around the edges and call them out for it. And these two Huxley boys were the grandson of Thomas Henry Huxley, who was known as Darwin's bulldog. He was Charles Darwin's mouthpiece, essentially. Charles Darwin was a eugenicist and an author and all of that, but he was very bad at public speaking. He was not somebody that you could put on a stage to defend his ideas. He had the ideas. He just, couldn't verbalize them in a way, but Thomas Huxley most definitely could, and he was a very aggressive person. So the idea of Darwin and Darwinism, this evolutionary concept that a lot of people have huge problems with, this is in existence for a number of reasons. One, because their grandfather was vocal about it, and two, because all of these people were members of the Committee of 300, which I've said in the past, I think is the most dangerous group in the world. And it rotates, people kind of drop in, they drop off as they pass away or as they maybe get older and sort of step aside. And so there's a new batch of lunatics that are members of the Committee of 300. So now you've got guys like, Eric Schmidt and Peter Thiel, a bunch of technocrats in it. So it's still there. It's still a group and it's still dangerous, maybe even the most dangerous group imaginable. But they've been working on this for a long, long time. And part of what their ultimate goals are is world government and depopulation. It's always world government and it's always depopulation as a subset of that. And they're the ones that have been pushing this for over 100 years. So it shouldn't come as a huge surprise, but I want to talk a little bit about what's in the book, Brave New World. It's set in futuristic London where life is directed by a chosen few people at the world state. So you can think of this as like, United Nations or, the world government. It's the world government. And within this society, fictional society, though it's their fantasy society, it's a caste system. And you are born into it. You're either an alpha, a beta, a gamma, a delta, or an epsilon. And each caste is less physically and mentally impressive than the one above it. And you can think of India's caste system as similar in some regards. And you can talk about Woodrow Wilson saying, well, we want two forms of education. One form, one for the elite aristocrats where they get a liberal education. And then we want a more standardized education system for everybody else, the ones who are going to be working in the factories and the farms. And so they just want to educate you just enough to work the machines, as Carlin says. So there's nothing inherently new about this concept. It's been that way for a while. In this book, they work to normalize that as well. They talk about things like state hatcheries and a group called the hatcheries and commission and conditioning. So like you're born by the state. One of the things that you'll notice in this is that the concept of family is anathema to them, right? They don't want you to have an understanding of what your family is. They don't want you in this book to be born to a woman and raised by a mom and a dad. They want you to be raised by the state for a variety of reasons. You're more controllable. And it reminds me of the legislation in the House of Representatives, I think just Congress in general, I think, but to ban certain words. This happened during the Biden administration, no surprise, but they banned words like mother and father and brother and sister and uncle and grandpa and grandmother and all the very unusual. I mean, I can understand if you ban the term fuck Joe Biden, I understand that, but I don't understand when you're banning the term mother and father. Unless, of course, you are trying to lay the groundwork for the eventual convergence of into a brave new world, where the first step towards removing the family is removing the words that you use to describe a family. And if you can do that, you're just one step closer to, you know, who's that person over there that dropped you off at school? That's my, what do we call her? That's Carol. that's your mother, you know? So if you can take these words away in a very 1984 sort of way, where you newspeak is the only language that's getting smaller, not larger in terms of number of words. So there's a theme running through all of this, you know, whether you're George Orwell or Aldous Huxley. By the way, in the caste system, the deltas are clones. Interesting, huh? Walk around the mall today, if there is a mall still open in your area, but walk around the mall and see if you see any clones. I mean, NPCs, clones, pretty close. I mean, it feels like they're detached from their humanity in some respects, or their soul, I don't know, maybe chemically. And in the book, they most definitely are. And again, if you understand the book as the finish line, this is where they want to go. This isn't like a cautionary tale. This is like a blueprint for enslavement. If you understand where they want to go, then you can just work backwards. So there's something called Soma. There's a drug. It's a happy pill. You take the pill. They also spray it in the air like vapor, like pepper spray. Let's say the police are getting into a situation where there's a bunch of people that start asking questions. They just pepper spray them, but with Soma, which then makes everybody happy and docile and more compliant. There's no freedom or originality or individuality in this brave new world at all. They don't want that. It's a 24/7 surveillance by the state. These are the sort of similarities to the direction that Trump's technocrats want to go. So when I started to hear the plan that they were laying out, I was like, this is Brave New World. That's all this is. This is just a rebranding of it with different characters. Lack of freedom is a small price to pay for stability and security. That's what they say in the book. You know, it's for your safety, as the Germans would say. Right? So they want you to trade in your freedom. Freedom. You don't need freedom. Or as they say in the Jones Plantation, freedom isn't free, right? It comes with a price. Security and stability. You want security and stability? Well, that's going to cost you. And unfortunately, they collect it in ways that are antithetical to human existence. They vaccinate the embryos destined for tropical climates. 1932. They're talking about vaccinating all the kids. Okay, this isn't accidental. The things that we're seeing, the big pharma, none of this is haphazard or random. It's been planned 100 years in advance, at least the ideas behind it. Maybe it takes a little time for the technology to catch up with the ideas, but here we are, right? They reprogram Delta infants. These are the clone infants to dislike books and flowers, in order to make them into docile consumers with no appreciation for beauty. I would suggest that some of the architecture that we currently see is done for the same reasons. Look at the architecture from like the early 1900s or late 1800s. It's beautiful. Or look at the stuff from hundreds of years ago in Europe. It's amazing. And look at some of the horse shit that is getting built these days. So it's quite obvious that they're trying to destroy beauty and culture and creativity and imagination. They hate that. And in the book, they talk about why that is. They say that for these deltas, they have something called sleep teaching method of subliminal messages to install the morals of the state. Oh, yikes. Wait, the state has morals? You're confusing me here. Sure. No, we're just trying to get terrorists by bombing hospitals. You know, they're just, you know, they're just hidden in the basements. They talk about the push to remove strong emotions and desires from the people. They just want half people, people that have regulators or governors on their soul, or they're just not able to excel. There is a, you know, we've talked about this in the past. We're almost at the point, right, where Dr. Russell Blaylock, the neurosurgeon, talks about this group of people that are dependent on the government and are unable to excel and are stuck in a malaise. He talks about that. He says they're just down on the reservation, dependent on the government, unable to see how everything works, and then a small segment of high IQ people that can see the plan for what it is, and they recognize it. So his ideas, this Dr. Russell Blaylock talking about this in our modern times, is sort of almost identical to the direction they would like you to go in Brave New World. Sexualization of children at a very young age with multiple partners. This is a common theme for the elites as well. Of course, they screw their kids up by screwing them, and then you've got a lifetime of control over these people. I mean, you'd think it's not good to be raping people anyway, but you'd think you'd leave your kids out of it, right? You'd think, oh, if I'm going to destroy society or destroy these people, I would do it to other people, not my family. Well, you would be wrong, because it seems to be the common denominator of all these European aristocracies and all these longtime industrialist families. They're all screwed up. They're all broken. They're broken intentionally. They break their own toys. They talk about in this movie permits from the government, or in this book, the permits from the government in order to travel. You mean like 15-minute cities? You mean like that? There's a group called the Savages. The Savages are like normal people, but they're the ones that aren't hatched. Social standing, social credit means everything to them. And it can be revoked by the world state at will. So your social credit, your social standing can be adjusted based on your behavior by the world government. Really? You don't say. Sounds like a social credit system to me. Fantasy of these people. Love, marriage, parents, all non-existent in the world state. Bringing me back to my point about why Congress is removing words. There's a hospital for dying. You mean like medical assistance in dying? You mean like that sort of thing? Or are we talking in death conditioning? When you're at a certain point, they put you through death conditioning. You mean death panels? Was Bill Gates talking about this? Death panels? Some hard decisions are going to have to be made. Why is that creep talking to Donald Trump? And they also talk about a push to control negative emotions, and they want social harmony. But this is all feels very Black Mirror to me. It reminds me of the episode, the social media episode, where everyone's got a smile and someone rings your doorbell and like, hi, is this the best day of your life? They're like, oh, it's great. And then they like walk away and they're grumpy. It's like, but we got to put on a happy face because you guys are judging each other in your social media apps and whatnot. And we can't show that we're unhappy, right? So this conditioning, this mind control, action control, this is the world that these technocrats want. And Brave New World is both predictive programming and a blueprint for technological and medical enslavement. Let's talk about Larry Ellison. Citizens will be on their best behavior, Larry Ellison. Oh, really? Why is that? Because you're watching them? Because you will push a button and have them have their heads explode? Their embedded nanotechnology? You'll give them a bad social credit score and they'll have to eat out of dumpsters? I mean, what are we talking about here, Larry? Trump's Brave New World is being formed now, with implications for the future of humanity. There's a $500 billion artificial intelligence infrastructure plan that he's proposing with these guys. I'm sure you've heard of it. And if you're freaking out a little bit by it, or you're thinking this doesn't sound good, you are right to think that. Let's talk a little bit about Larry Ellison. I don't know if you're familiar with who this guy is, but he's been on the scene for a long time. He's in his like late 70s. And he's Oracle. If you know the company Oracle, he's a Department of Defense contractor. He owns the Hawaiian island of Lanai, which he owns 98% of it. Did some snorkeling around Lanai last time I was in Maui. Don't think I wasn't thinking that Larry Ellison owned it, because I was the whole time. My wife is like, stop. Okay, enough of the Larry Ellison talk. I'm like, yeah, but do you know what kind of a scumbag he is? And she's like, I get it. Let's just go snorkeling. Let's not worry about this. Can't help myself. I know who he is. He's worth $210 billion. Okay. He's behind Elon and Bezos in this tech race for, I don't know, global, whoever's got the biggest dick or whatever, whoever's got the most money. Larry Ellison has been doing this since 1977. He started his company. Initially, it wasn't named Oracle. Initially, his first client for this company was the CIA. And making it much like Palantir, a CIA front company building a relational database. That's what he was doing. And the code name of the project he was working on for the CIA was called Oracle. And his company wasn't named Oracle in 77. It was, I think, like 83 or something like that. I think they finally changed the name to Oracle. You know, because that's the project he was working on for the CIA. So when I see Oracle and when you see it, just know that it is a front company for the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, Larry has got all the stock. You know, he still owns 43% of Oracle. I don't know how, after being married six times, divorced five times. I don't know how he's got 43% of Oracle. I mean, look at Mackenzie Bezos. She's got herself quite a bit, and Melinda Gates. They've got a sizable amount of their ex-husband's fortunes, but maybe, I don't know, maybe Larry threatened to throw his ex-wives out of airplanes or something like that. He's a pilot. Maybe they didn't get the sort of deal that the others got. I don't know. I'm speculating here, but I'm sure he did threaten his wives. That I'm pretty comfortable saying, because otherwise he wouldn't own 43% of Oracle. He'd own 14% of Oracle, and there'd be a bunch of ex-wives that'd be at the board shareholders meeting each year. So after 9/11, this is how far back this push for mass surveillance goes. After 9/11, Larry Ellison approached the government, which he is part of, and offered to donate, air quotes, a national ID database to offer ID cards to all Americans. So they've been working on enslaving humanity and national digital ID cards for at least 25 years. And I guess the timing wasn't right. Maybe the technology wasn't there. But for whatever reason, it didn't happen in the aftermath of 9/11. But it looks like it might happen in the aftermath of the Biden administration, where now that Larry Ellison has a seat at the table and has ideas. So he donates regularly to the Friends of the Israeli Defense Force, Friends of the IDF. Oh, really? Because they don't already have enough stolen money from the United States? Wow, thanks, Larry. That's very nice of you. He donated $200 million to my old school, USC, for cancer research in 2016. So, you know, so he's been into this for a while. And what did he talk about in that press conference with Trump? He talked about personalized artificial intelligence mRNA vaccines, and he's for cancer. And I mentioned he donated 200 mil to USC specifically for cancer, right? So he's been involved in this for a while. He owns fucking, I don't know how many of his houses. I'm curious. I should have looked this up. I wonder how many of his houses burned down in Malibu. Last time I checked, he had, I think, 14 houses in Malibu. I mean, he's got literally more money than he knows what to do with. He's buying Hawaiian islands, and he's like, how can I buy this house in Malibu? Like, you can buy like Carbon Beach if you want. Like, you can buy all these houses. He's like, okay, so I'll buy all these houses and assemble them into a monster compound, like the one he's got up in Northern California that's on like 3 acres and I think in like Mountain View somewhere, or I forget. Anyway, it's like the most beautiful. He built like a Japanese village in his house. Like, his whole house looks like an old Japanese. I mean, it's insane. If you have the time and you're interested, go look up Larry Ellison's houses. He bought Porcupine Creek in Rancho Mirage, not too far from where I grew up. That's a 250-acre. It's the best property in all of the Palm Springs area. Period. End of story. Nobody even knows about it. It never comes up for sale. It was owned by Tim Blexeth, who is a scumbag who started Yellowstone Club, and he wound up in bankruptcy, and then Ellison bought it out of bankruptcy. And it's 250 acres right up against the mountains in Rancho Mirage. It has a 19-hole golf course, which is kind of perfect for these big dick technocrat guys. It's like, you want to, you know, golf courses are 18 holes. He's like, well, I want to have a 19-hole. Of course you do. So there's a 19-hole golf course at Porcupine Creek. He bought down the street, he bought the Indian Wells Tennis Garden, BNP Paribas tournament, which is held there. He bought the tournament. He bought the tennis facility in Indian Wells. He's got a sort of a, you know, when Rafa would come to play in Indian Wells. I know this because my mom would always go to the tennis events there and loved Rafa. When Rafa Nadal would come into town to play in the BNP Paribas in Indian Wells, he would always stay at Larry Ellison's house in Porcupine Creek. So anyway, he's got all kinds of goodies. He's got 7 airplanes, and he's got like a MiG-29 fighter jet that the American government won't allow him to bring into the country. I don't know where it's stashed, but he's got one. He's a pilot himself. So, you know, I mean, like, he's involved in yachting, and you'll probably see that if you're somebody that I have no interest in yachting, but I do know that the Oracle boat is sort of always in the, you know, it's the Ferrari of yachting, I suppose. And so he's always involved in the, you know, rich guy stuff, you know, airplanes, golf courses, fighter jets, things like that. I suppose if I had $210 billion, I'd be looking for things out there that I could buy as well. But, I certainly wouldn't be looking to enslave humanity or depopulate the planet with my mRNA technologies, but I'm also not Larry Ellison. He's funded annexation programs in Israel because he's best friends with Bibi Netanyahu. He's offered Netanyahu a high-ranking job at Oracle. What could possibly go wrong there, right? And he wants biometrics of everybody in a national database. I mean, he's a bad guy. You know, I get, you know, don't let the cancer charity sideshow fool you. Larry Ellison wants you all in a database that he controls. In fact, here's a quote from him. The Oracle database is used to keep track of basically everything. The information about your banks, your checking balance, your savings balance is stored in an Oracle database. Your airline reservation is stored in an Oracle database. What books you bought on Amazon is stored in an Oracle database. Your profile on Yahoo is stored in an Oracle database. We get it. Everything. He's got everything. He's got it all. He's got all the information. And he would love for all of the national ID programs to run through that database as well. He wants to personalize. He wants, again, personalize artificial intelligence, mRNA, cancer vaccines for every person on the planet. He's extremely dangerous. And somebody who, if you aren't already familiar with him, well, you are now. Let's talk about Sam Altman. and OpenAI, his company, OpenAI. Is it OpenAI or is it Cyberdyne? Are we talking about Sam Altman or are we talking about Miles Dyson? Did you see Terminator 2? You remember the plot of that, right? I'm convinced if I see it, if a Terminator, if a T-800 Terminator came back in time to right now, I'm convinced its mission would be to murder Sam Altman. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure that's the guy in the movie that you would get. That he's the Miles Dyson of reality here. Not necessarily limited to being a character in Hollywood. If you remember, Cyberdyne Systems was the company that was building Skynet in the movie. And so I don't know if you want to say that it's Sam Altman who is running Cyberdyne or if it's Elon Musk, because he certainly does have the satellites that would work well for building Skynet. But we might have to, someone might have to go in there and destroy, someone might have to bite the bullet and go down with the ship and take out the revolutionary microprocessor facility like they did in the movies. I'm just saying, I'm not advocating for violence. I'm just saying that you might find yourself in a situation where you're going to have to blow that building up with a bomb strapped to your body. I'm just saying. So, Sam Altman is a member of the World Economic Forum Young Global Leaders program in 2015. He's a member of Bilderberg. I'm sure that's no surprise. He's Peter Thiel's buddy. Peter Thiel's on the steering committee of Bilderberg. So these guys are most definitely up to no good. He's a gay Zionist, destroyer of culture, who is accused of rape by his sister, dating from the time 1997 to 2006. He's been accused of rape by his sister, as well as emotional, verbal, financial, and technological abuse in order to keep her from going public with her story. Now, everybody is entitled to a trial if this is an actual legitimate claim. Maybe it will be sorted out. I'm just saying what she's accusing him of. I'm not saying that he's necessarily guilty of this. He is a gay man, that's for sure. He's a hardcore Zionist, and I don't think he denies either of those things. And of course, he's in charge of artificial intelligence right now. And I think that he's somebody who you're going to have to keep an eye on. You're certainly going to continue to hear more about Sam Altman going forward. And I don't think you're going to like what you hear, because he's not, you know, he's the American Noah Yuval Harari, as far as I'm concerned. And there's a lot of overlap here. He might not be, that little elfish scumbag at the WEF who's talking about how, you know, free will, that's obsolete, that goes away. Nobody has a soul, you know, don't worry about that. See, and the reason why I think it's important to mention that he's gay in this regard is because and Harari as well, who also is a homosexual Zionist, you have to ask the question, where do they see the future? What's the future like for them? When you have children, you have a vested interest in the future. You know you're going to pass away at some point, but your children will remain, and they're going to inherit the world that you were a part of. And if you sat around and did nothing to make the world better, then you have to understand that they're going to be living in that world. So I have real problems with the guys who, first of all, I think the Zionist ideology is destructive. They're not builders, they're destroyers. So I'm already suspicious when I see those guys in positions of power. The homosexuality component, typically, I don't care one way or the other. As somebody who grew up in Palm Springs, I was surrounded by it my entire life. Wasn't a big deal. It's not my jam, but I'm not against it. You know, I have no energy necessarily one way or the other. It's the combination of the two. You know, and by the way, some gay people adopt kids and they're fantastic parents. Some adopt kids and they're monsters to them, as we've seen as well. So it's not that he's a Zionist necessarily, that's the only thing. And it's not that he's a homosexual, because that could be something else as well. It's the combination of the two in a position of power, World Economic Forum, with all the money in the world, backed by Microsoft / Bill Gates, who's invested $13 billion in OpenAI. They are the largest shareholder of it. So I get very concerned when these people are talking about the future, but they don't have any sort of blood in the game. They don't have kids that are going to be impacted by this. Elon Musk does. He has a bunch of kids. He's the only person I've heard talking about how we're underpopulated. I'm still very suspicious of him, but it's worth noting that out of all these people, the only guy I hear talking about underpopulation is Elon Musk. Everybody else is talking about how this world would work a lot better if it wasn't for all these fucking people on it, you know? And Sam Altman is one of them. He talked about changes to the social contract. There will be changes to the social contract. I'm sorry. First of all, I didn't sign a social contract. And second of all, who the fuck are you to say that you're going to be changing the social contract? Who are you? I mean, you're a guy who's being accused of rape by his sister, and not once, over a 9-year period. What's going on? By the way, rape is about control. It's not about, you say, well, he's homosexual. Why would he rape his sister? It's not about that. It's about control. So I don't know if he did. I don't know if he didn't. But he's a very dangerous person. If he probably got on your radar, if not for OpenAI, maybe for WorldCoin. Do you remember that? That was a couple of years ago, not too many years ago, where he was saying that, you know, if you scan your eyeball, we'll give you $50 worth of WorldCoin crypto. They did this in Argentina. They tried this out. They had this, it's like a big, it's like Palantir. It's like a big ball, right? It's like the eye of Sauron. And you walk in and you stick your eye in it. It scans your retina, and then it puts you in a database. What could possibly go wrong with that? And then they give you $50 of worthless shitcoin of a world coin, right? Congratulations. I don't know what that's worth. But he talks about the plan for WorldCoin is universal basic income. And he says he wants this company, this WorldCoin component, to be in charge of global wealth distribution, i.e. communism. Right? That's what it is. And the goal of the project is to become, this is his words, the largest human identity and financial network on the planet. So he wants to identify everybody, and he wants to tie the financial network to your identity. So they're talking about, again, and keep in mind, this is in the context of Larry Ellison is standing right over his shoulder, and he's on the record saying he wants everybody in a database, and that his database is used to basically keep track of everything. And then you've got Sam Altman saying, I love universal basic income, but I only love it when it's tied to biometrics. And we don't have a problem with global wealth distribution, but you're going to have your eyeballs scanned in order for us to know who this is. He talked about, this is biometric data harvesting. This is a classic Intel operation under the guise of technology and technocrats, right? So one millimeter below the surface of Sam Altman is the CIA. And they're looking at this and they're going, LifeLog, aka Facebook, a perfect start. How can we take this and tie it to, how can we make the WeChat in America the way they've got it in China? Tie that into your social credit score as well, right? Here you go. Here's how they're going to do it. They're going to do it with Larry Ellison. They're going to do it with Sam Altman. They're going to do it with Elon Musk. That's how they're going to do it. And they're going to do it to thunderous approval by the MAGA group, who's never going to see it coming because all of the biometrics is going to be sold to them under the guise of keeping those dirty illegals out of our country. We make them have all their eyeballs scanned. Maybe even their buttholes too, just to make sure, and not allow them across the border until we know exactly who they are. And everyone on the right will say, thank God, it's about time. We got to get serious about this border. We got to get serious about not letting these people in. And if it will start as people at the border, and then it will be anybody on an airplane coming into the country. And then it will be anytime you want to get an ID. And then it will, and then once you're in that trap, then they've got you. They're just very close to this. Again, let's back to who Sam Altman is. Have you heard of Y Combinator? It's like a, how would I describe it? Like a venture capital fund, incubator. It's a tech incubator. That's the best way to put it. In a technology company that incubates and funds and infuses with the right talent and guidance and high ranking, sort of official people who've been there and done that in the working world, advisors. Y Combinator is, you can submit your projects to it. And if you get approval, then you find funding. And next thing you know, these guys are all on your board of directors. So he's a partner of Y Combinator. He's the president of it now. And so he's in it. He's in the middle of Silicon Valley with all these guys. And you know, Elon Musk and Peter Thiel, their names get all the headlines, and rightly so. But don't sleep on Sam Altman, because he might rape you. No, don't sleep on Sam Altman, because he's extremely dangerous and you just maybe don't know the ins and outs of who he is quite yet. Let's talk about his funding, because the OpenAI funding is as gross as you would think it would be with all the Silicon Valley technocrats. He took money from Elon Musk. He took money from Peter Thiel. He took money from Sequoia Capital, money from Infosys. Y Combinator is involved. They put money in. Microsoft, as I mentioned, $13 billion. Amazon is involved. Amazon Web Services are involved in this as well. Greg Brockman from Stripe is now the president of OpenAI. So we've got the payment component, guy who's involved in Stripe, their like a PayPal or credit card swiping company. So you've got the payment side. Of course, you already have the payment side with Elon Musk and Peter Thiel, co-founders of PayPal. So you can understand why the artificial intelligence component of this, just below the surface, is payments. It's all payments. That's why you bring a guy from Stripe in. That's why you bring Elon and Peter in. That's why you've got you've got Amazon Web Servers and things like that. This is the payment platform of the future. So, but I'll tell you what, giving this guy control of $500 billion to build out an AI infrastructure is insane to me. I just think that's such a bad idea, but it fits. It fits with the pivot to the public-private partnership. That's sort of the way things are going. That which the government cannot do because of legality or because of the optics of it, you just instead privatize that. You say, well, we're not doing it. We, the government, aren't doing it. It's OpenAI who's doing it. We have a partnership arrangement with them. We don't know the ins and outs of artificial intelligence. We're just dummies at the government. So we've partnered with this private company. And when I say private, it's publicly traded, but private in that it's not the government. So let's not confuse that publicly, shares available to the general public with it being it's still private in the sense that it's not controlled by the government. But is it? Is it not controlled by the government? I mean, you're getting government contracts. You're the president of the United States is announcing that he's going to give you $500 billion to build this thing out. This is the way they do it. It's how you get around a lot of regulations and scrutiny and all that stuff. You just outsource it and say, well, we're not the bad guys here. When it all goes wrong, it's not us. It's this company over there. The plan would essentially privatize the digital enslavement of humanity under the guise of securing the southern border and fixing the immigration problem, which we have, which are real problems and need to be solved. But unfortunately, it's a very problem reaction solution way of doing things here. Problem? 12 million people have come across the border. We don't know who they are or where they are or what they're doing. Reaction? Oh my God, save us. Please, whatever you need to do. Solution. Well, the solution is we're going to have to load people up into planes and fly them to God knows where, and we're going to have to tag them biometrically, you know, find out who they are, and then put them in the system. And if they ever come back to the border, we'll know where they are, probably because they're injected with something as well. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. Let's talk about what Trump is doing. He's such a fucking grifter. He's the new carnival barker, right? He's shilling his own shitcoin just days before the inauguration. It's so on brand, though. You know what I mean? Trump steaks, Trump university, Trump airplane, Trump this, Trump that, you know, Trump towers, Trump golf courses. He puts his name on it. Trump wine. Do you drink wine? No, I never drink wine. I don't like wine. I've never had alcohol. Oh, but you put your name on wine. Donald Trump is like the KISS. He's like the KISS army of politics. I mean, he's just licensing everything, including a shitcoin, which, by the way, he launched the coin, cashed out by the accounts that I read from people who are crypto guys who know what to look for, said that he cashed out $500 million within the first 2 days and then rugged his followers. He rug pulled his followers before he even got had the inauguration second time around. We're America's back, baby. We're such grifters. Oh my God. I mean, he still hasn't disavowed Operation Warp Speed. I'm still waiting for that. Actually, he's doubled down with the artificial intelligence mRNA vaccines for cancer, this brave new world of his. So I don't know that I'm expecting him to ever apologize for what he did with the COVID vaccines. That's not part of who he is. That's not the Roy Cohn playbook. Roy Cohn playbook is always declare victory, even in the face of obvious defeat. Always declare victory and never apologize for anything. So if you're waiting for him to go, you know, and second thought, those COVID vaccines had a lot of problems. I mean, he's done some of it in demonizing Fauci, rightly, yanking his security detail from him, you know. So you see that and you go, well, why are you doing that? I thought he's an American hero. What's the problem? Well, the problem is that Anthony Fauci is a criminal who's deeply involved in eugenics and depopulation through vaccines, right? But Trump can't say that. He can't say the reason why he's mad at Fauci. Because if he was to say it's because these horrible vaccines that he was in charge of, then there goes this whole artificial intelligence push. So there's never going to be any sort of apology for his actions of Operation Warp Speed. He owns it and doubles down on it all the time. Thinks it's great. It's not, as we know, but that's not going to stop him from continuing. So the AI powered surveillance grid that he's financing with these tech bros will be used to completely remake society and modify behavior. It's you think about the psychological component of this, the damage done by living in a world where you know you have no privacy. That's Brave New World. That's one of the things that they talked about in there, is that in a world where everyone is watching you, we know that it changes the way you behave. I mean, as Larry Ellison said, citizens will be on their best behavior. Yeah, no shit. When you can push a button from world state, at the headquarters of world state, you can push a button and turn somebody's money off, or maybe even blow up the implantable chip located at the base of their skull or something, whatever they decide in the future. You're damn right, citizens will be on their best behavior. That's the problem, is that it will be inauthentic and everybody will act differently when they know they're being watched. That's just human nature. And it's diabolical. as far as I'm concerned. So how much of the plan are you trying? Are you still trusting the plan? Because I was told to trust the plan. I was told that many, many years ago. But it appears that what the plan currently is right now are immigration raids, troops on the border, all while shipping, you know, saying that we're going to shut off aid to all these foreign countries. And then you find out, well, you know, except for Israel and Egypt. Well, that's weird. Why you get, okay, I understand Israel because you are a whore for Israel. We get that. But why Egypt? Oh, well, the Egypt money, the reason why we give Egypt money is we give them money so that they won't start a fight with Israel. So it is really sort of like it's money for Egypt, but it's on behalf of Israel so that they don't get any wise ideas. So congratulations. Yeah. Winning, right? This is a, I think it's worth noting, by the way, and this seemed like it came out of the blue with Trump, but it didn't. A lot of talk about merging the United States and Canada and also acquiring Greenland. Very strange, unless you understand about the 10 kingdoms of the Club of Rome. Oh, are you familiar with this? You can go find, go get Bill Cooper's book, Behold a Pale Horse, and you'll find the map in there of it. Do you know what group one is? It's 10 kingdoms, 10 groups. And group one is the United States, Canada, and Greenland. Now does it make sense that this is why he's talking about this? And I'm going to make Canada the 51st state. We're going to buy Greenland. And you're like, okay, is that an Arctic play? Is that a mineral play? Is this the new Alaska that you think you're buying? Is there oil under there? What's the plan? Well, maybe it's all of those things in addition to being part of this grouping that the Club of Rome would love to put forth. Fun fact, by the way, group four in this list, you want to hear what group four is? It's a weird combo. In Australia, New Zealand, Oceania, which is in Tasmania, right? That kind of makes sense. Also, South Africa and Israel. Wait, what? So it's not geographic necessarily. That's what they have as group four. Australia, New Zealand, Tasmania, Oceania, South Africa, and Israel. All in one group. Check it out. Check out Behold a Pale Horse by Bill. If you haven't checked it out already, I mean, how dare you? You should be. You should be well-versed in that stuff. That's like reading, it's like reading a map of the future when you read that book. In Trump's Brave New World, he would agree with the world state that a lack of freedom is a small price to pay for stability and security. I think that those are, I think he feels that way. That you can't get something for nothing. If you want the security of the American Empire, if you want to be on the winning team, you know, then it costs. Freedom isn't free. And you have to pay in some way, shape, or form. And we're not talking about financially paying. We're not talking about taxes. We're talking about giving up your sovereignty, your rights, your soul, maybe. We've talked about how a social credit system, a universal basic income, a central bank digital currency could be implemented, right? And that they crash a banking system and then offer you this carrot. Like, well, you know, we'll make you whole on the CBDCs, which may or may not happen. It looks like it's going more towards stable coins. But look, don't get fooled by the terminology. You know, they love to play with words. When you hear the term stable coins, that doesn't mean permanently stable coin. It just means it's stable in the sense that it doesn't have massive fluctuations. Like something like Tether is really pegged to the dollar. So it's not like you're going to buy Tether at a dollar and wait for it to go up to $12. It's not going to do that. It's part of what it is it's a stable coin. But don't get fooled by the name into thinking that they're not also programmable, because they are. And of course, CBDCs have a lot of baggage with them, rightly so, because we've been screaming about how that's the hill to die on. You don't want programmable money. But again, don't be confused. Stable coins are just as programmable as a central bank digital currency. They just haven't been programmed yet, but they can be. And he's interested in that. So I thought it was interesting that J.D. Vance and Elon, of course, are saying that we need more babies. Would the babies be born at the state hatchery, like in Brave New World? Is that what we're talking about here? More babies for humans or more babies for Harari to be in charge of? Clones? I don't know. Maybe. So let's wrap it up. But, you know, it's all going to appear so obvious in retrospect that they were slowly building out a digital prison. You know, the WeChat, the social credit system, the universal basic income dependency. You know, we've seen them do that. We've seen what happens when they get you hooked on free government money, be that the Native American Indian reservations, be that the welfare system that's set up. Once you take that money, you make a deal with the devil, and it precludes you from earning even more money, because if you're taking the government dole, you're stuck with what you get. And anything, think of government cheese or government schools or anything the government is giving you for free, it's going to be one size fits all, low quality, and bad for you. We know this. So I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about how, you know, it doesn't do you any good in the future to look back on this and go, yeah, you know what? You're right. They were building out this digital prison around us. We just didn't see it. No, it's important to figure it out now. It doesn't do you much good to figure it out 8 years from now when you're in it, stuck in it. You go, oh, you know, I sure should have, I wish I'd said something or done something, or I wish we all collectively had said, we're not going to participate in this. But I don't know. That seems to be the way we're going. And when I hear these guys talking about the future that they want, it sounded to me like the future that Aldous Huxley was writing about at the behest of his masters and fellow members of the Committee of 300. Some people think that Trump wants Greenland for national resources, and some say that he wants it for control of the Arctic. But we all know what he really wants it for is the Savage Reservation. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. Go to activistpost.com. Get your news there. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again soon.